is being recorded. Sub-started.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the BC Members Call on February 23rd, 2017. On today's call, we have Steve Del Bianco, Hiba Kamal Grayson, Jimson Alufie, John Berard, Barbara Warner, Lawrence Alawale Roberts, Jay Chapman, Andrew Harris, Chris Wilson, Andy Abrams, Cecilia Smith, Allison Simpson, Denise Michelle, Nasser Basir, Tim Smith, Phil Corwin, Marilyn Cave, Marie Petullo, Alex Deacon, Isabel Rutherford, and Susan Kawaguchi. We have apologies from Beth Allegretti and Andrew Mack. From staff, we have myself, Chantal Dirksen. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chris.
Thanks, Chantal. Chris Wilson here. Welcome, everybody. It's been, I guess, a few weeks since our last call, and a fair amount's transpired in that time, including the intersessional last week in Iceland, which Barbara can provide some information about during her report. But in the meantime, why don't we go ahead and turn to Steve and the policy calendar. I know we've had some activity on the list on some comments we're filing, so it would be great to close the loop on that. So, Steve, to you.
Thank you, Chris. This is Steve Del Bianco, and I do think the policy calendar piece of this call today will be less than 25 minutes to leave time for Jimson and Barbara to cover their topics as well. Channel one of the policy calendar, let me focus on only one item, which is new since the last call we had on the 2nd of February, and that's the first item. We had an excellent reply, I think, to AFNIC's concern about not enough French speakers in the BC, in particular French speakers in the executive committee, and that was filed on the 3rd of February. Then the comment period ended for the BC Charter public comment, and there were four other comments posted. And when in Iceland, I discussed with Rob Hogarth on ICANN's staff the process he would use to take those comments on board and send them over to the ICANN board. And he welcomed direct response from the business constituency to inform how he would present it to the ICANN board for them to consider the BC proposed charter. To get that started, I worked with Andy Abrams. We put together a single doc that had excerpts from all of the comments and included draft responses from the business constituency. Last night, Andy Mack and the members of the outreach committee also contributed several bullets, and Andy Abrams is going to compile those in with the document that's the first attachment on today's policy calendar. So let's open a queue on the draft BC response to the comments on our charter. It's attachment number one to the policy calendar circulated 2 days ago and again yesterday. Andy, thank you again for pulling that together. And I think it's a pretty strong response, particularly on outreach. John Berard, I note that you're on the call, and we did also address your comment as well. And the Registry Stakeholder Group comment was quite curious because they pointed out that resellers, that is to say domain name resellers, in a relationship with registrars, find themselves without a place in the ICANN GNSO structure. Because they're not contract parties directly, they worried that resellers would not be part of the registrar constituency, so therefore they have to land in the bucket called the VC. And we are pushing back firmly on that to suggest it ought to be the registrar's charter that get modified to accommodate their resellers who are operating under the same contractual terms that the registrars are. I do hope that we'll be able to push back on that. Andy, is there anything I want to bring up with this group in particular that needs response?
I don't think so. I appreciate the response from the outreach committee, and I'll add that in. Otherwise, yeah, if everybody could take a quick look at the letter to make sure we're not missing anything, I think that's it.
All right. Before I go to Marilyn, I'll let you all know that Rob Hogarth indicated that he would welcome it if it got to him soon by the end of February, and that's why we've had a 10-day review period to allow you to comment on that. So I intend to send this to Rob Hogarth I don't know for sure whether it'll be posted on the public comment website, but it will be a public document on the BC policy and correspondence page. Marilyn Cave, go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. I just want to compliment everybody for the great work. In particular, I want to compliment Jimson, myself, and a few others for submitting the update on the outreach. But I wanted to comment here about this issue about if you're a reseller, you belong in the BC as opposed to in the registrar constituency. And I wanted to comment because I actually, in 1998, I actually paid the fee from my budget for AT&T to apply to be a boutique reseller. They eventually withdrew and chose to help launch the BC. They picked their poison, so to speak. Now, I think things are a little different here, and I think our charter actually addresses this effectively. If less than a certain percent of your business is from a contracted party, then you can be a BC member. If you exceed the percentage, then you need to find another home. And I do think we should be encouraging the registrar constituency to be open and inclusive, just as the registry constituency has had to show some inclusiveness to, for instance, the brand registry. I don't know if we want to spend a lot of time on this, but I think it's important to say it's not us. There are other options. And yet, we are open. Okay. I was just going to say, and yet we are open. Go ahead.
Wanted to point out that on page 5 of the first attachment, we have an entire paragraph saying pretty much what you just said. So would you be so kind as to take a look at that text and see if you want to offer any edits to it? The first thing I'll note is that you make a very good point that if a reseller has less than 30% of their business as a reseller, they could still apply for BC membership. So, Andy, I'm going to ask you, let's make an edit on page 5. So that we indicate that resellers who have less than 30% of their business as a reseller are eligible in the draft charter that we already put out.
Yeah, Steve, it's Marilyn. I'm only going to say that, you know, I think we should say in our proposed charter. I think we'll be approved, but let's just say in our proposed charter.
Thank you. Any other comments on our response on the charter? Great. And Marilyn, I do think that's your line, if you don't mind muting. Thank you very much. That's all for the channel 1. If we move to channel 2 on open public comments, and you can just scroll down on channel 2, you'll note that the first one up is the release of another set of geographic names. I don't mean channel 2. I meant to say the open public comments. Sorry about that. We have a release of several .brand PLD registries that want to release geonames at the second level. Andy Abrams, again, thank you for drafting the BC comment. I circulated that on the 7th of February to give us the full 14-day review, and that comment period closes tomorrow on the 24th. It was the second attachment on today's policy calendar, so I would consider today to be the last chance, the last call, if anyone has any edits to the attachment 2. Going once. Going twice. Thank you, Andy, very much. I will submit that tomorrow. The second item on the open public comment is the GNSO's initial report on a PDP working group to come up with curative rights protection mechanisms for intergovernmental organizations and international non-governmental organizations, IGO, INGO. Phil Corwin's a co-chair of that working group and has been leading it for close to 2 years now. We turned it over to Jay Sadowski and Andy Abrams, who drafted a BC comment. It's the third attachment to the policy calendar. This comment is due on the 1st of March. So since it's been circulated, we have plenty of time to review. And I do encourage everyone to open and look at Attachment 3. And while you're looking at that, let me go to the queue. Phil Corwin.
Yeah, Steve, I just wanted to thanks Jay and Andy for taking the lead on this. And I've been remiss. I said I would weigh in on the draft. I've just been so buried since getting back from Reykjavik, but I will get some comments back on that before the close of business today.
Bill, thank you. When you do, reply all so that all of our colleagues, and I imagine you can do a track changes markup. And if you don't mind, please use the attachment to the policy calendar. That is the more current version.
I've just downloaded that from your last email that you sent out on the policy calendar. I'll use that version.
Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome.
We turn to Susan.
So just a really brief comment, and Phil, you probably have already know this, but we were on a call with NTIA yesterday, and I think it was Fiona. It was a little hard to tell who was speaking at the time. That is obviously very concerned about this, and kept reiterating, well, this is government business, and so the government should decide. Or I'm not quoting her exactly, but she also made the comment that the recommendation to use Sixter, and I have not followed this issue because you're so deeply involved in it, Phil. She said Sixter does not work for the U.S. government. So I was wondering, was that a recommendation that the working group put in their report, or am I misunderstanding what she was saying?
Let me, since I wasn't on the call, I'll explain as best I can. First of all, there is, the fact that NTIA is involved and is taking this position concerns me somewhat. I think you all know that there's going to be a moderated discussion facilitated by Bruce Tonkin between the GAC and Council regarding the whole range of IGO and Red Cross issues, including this one. The first that's been set, there's a two-hour call next Monday afternoon, the first call of that group, and then I think there'll be another meeting in Copenhagen. But there are background documents prepared as background for that group, and there's a draft that's been prepared. It says USG and GAC, which takes the position, has a sentence in there which implies that IGOs have absolute immunity. And this is the crux of the problem, is that we halted our working group for a year to locate and get an expert legal opinion from an expert in international law on what the scope of IGO immunity actually is, as opposed to what they were claiming it is. And it's much more nuanced than that. And ICANN has so this view that this is strictly a matter for governments, well, the fact is that governments, if you go to U.S. courts, IGOs don't have sovereign immunity. And, yes, it would be kind of ironic if ICANN was to take a position that they have absolute immunity. On Article 6 tier, all we've used Article 6 tier for, and by the way, U.S. government is bound to Article 6 tier, both as a signatory to it and as a member of the World Trade Organization, which it also covers. So it's a doubled down on Article 6 tier participation. All we've done is say that we've tried to make things easier for IGOs by saying that if you haven't trademarked your name or acronym of your name, but you have asserted your Article 6 tier protections, which is done by simply sending a letter to WIPO, it's as easy as anything can possibly be, that will suffice to provide you with standing to bring a UDRP or URS against a website that you think is using your name or acronym in a way that's designed to mislead the public. So it's strictly for standing purposes, and it's a way to ease the burden on IGOs. So I'll stop there, but we'll see what the U.S. position is. But if the U.S., if they're saying that only the GAC should decide this and not counsel, this is clearly a policy matter and has been identified as such by counsel.
Yeah, and there was a little pushback, this is a PDP, that comment just kept coming back up. That, well, this is a government matter. So anyway, I just wanted to give you.
Well, the one thing I'd say in response to that is that the governments want to take a position on this. One would hope that would be informed by a correct understanding of the applicable law. And frankly, everything I've seen from individual governments in the GAC is based on a wholly mistaken notion that IGOs have some absolute immunity, which is simply not the case.
Thanks, Phil. Answer.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Phil, we'll look forward to your markup on the draft that Jay and Andy have prepared. And I think that Arenola also was interested in helping on this, too, and has been otherwise detained. But Arenola, please do weigh in, because we want BC members to have an opportunity to review any edits that you make in time for our March 1st submission. Moving on to the next one. Number three,
Steve?
Is a draft.
Steve?
Go ahead. Yes?
Yeah, I just want to ask Phil the question about FIFA and IOC. FIFA and IOC, do they have any form of immunity?
Jimson, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, is not a IGO. It's an INGO. It's not an intergovernmental organization. It's a non-governmental organization. Our working group went back. We decided that INGOs did not need any special procedure as private parties. They already have full access to UDRP and URS based on their trademark registrations, and the IOC has lots of trademark registrations. And the attorney representing the IOC was of the same mind that they should be taken out of the work of our working group, and we went back and had our charter amended to take INGOs out. So they're a different species of organization, and their attorney believes that they already have ready access to curative rights processes when they need them.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Number three on the list is the draft report from the Independent Consultants Review of the At-Large and ALAC. And there is a distinction. At-Large is the community, and ALAC is their council, similar to GNSO and the GNSO Council. That is the item three on the policy calendar under open public comments. They closed the 24th of March. We have a lot of time, but we're going to need it. There's an awful lot in this report. It's a highly critical report because, let me just quote, the consultants say that what we have found about the ALAC is in equal measure promising and a cause for concern. They say their concern is that the at-large community is often perceived to be run by an unchanging group of individuals whose commitment to acting in the interests of end users is sincere, but who have struggled to make end user input into policy advice processes a reality. And this is by one of the consultants that go through a rotation at performing these external reviews of different ACs and SOs and ICANN. The next one of GNSO, where we live, will be 2019. And that review was a large subject at the intersessional in ISIN last week. We'll cover that later on. But at this point, this is a substantial report, and to make it easy to comment on, the consultants and ICANN staff have prepared a template that we'll be able to use to put our replies in. There's a hyperlink to the template in the policy calendar that you can see. I think that'll make it a relatively simpler task for the BC to get our arms around this. And I wanted to note that our commentary on the ALAC review is going to be introspective as well. We have the same issue in that there are millions of global businesses. I know there are billions of at-large users, but there are millions of businesses and billions of internet users of business websites, and we in the BC represent them all. So if this comment is a little too unrealistic as how one solicits input from billions of people, I think we may want to note that in the BC's observation, because what goes around comes around, and this is likely to be something that's discussed with respect to the BC as well. So we do need a volunteer to help draft replies for the template, and we have some time, but we do need to get a volunteer lined up on that, and it would be outstanding if that volunteer had a little bit of familiarity with the at-large community or the ALAC. Let me pause there and see if we can get a volunteer. Anyone on here who has been part of at-large?
Steve.
All right. Go ahead.
This is Tim Smith speaking. I don't have very much experience with at-large, but did engage with them a couple of years ago on an issue. I don't know that I can lead this, but I wouldn't mind participating in it.
Tim, thank you very much. Lawrence, fantastic. Lawrence Olawale-Roberts as well. If the two of you can take a stab at going through the questionnaire, and I wouldn't answer it online, I'd answer it in a Word doc that we can circulate it for other BC members to comment on. So that's fantastic. I'm glad we have at least two volunteers, Tim and Lawrence. Any others? Ari, I note Ari Giovenko is on from the Internet Association. And Ari, this might be a good one to jump in with. Tim and Lawrence are experienced. I'll be assisting as well. And with the Internet Association's broad reach of users of Internet business websites, this might be one that you might enjoy taking a look at. So I'd encourage you to jump in. All right, let's move to the next one. It's number four. Thanks, Ari. Number four is not due until the 10th of April. It's a long ways off, but it is going to take some doing. This is the draft report from the Workstream 2 group looking at transparency. And this is Workstream 2 that came out of the IANA transition and ICANN accountability. Chris Wilson, our chair, was co-rapporteur of the group. Barbara Warner and Heba, you were both either observers or participants on that group. It's a substantial report, and it includes recommendations that the BC put forth in 2014 regarding the ICANN's need to be transparent about its specific interactions with governments, which in the previous regime, the Fadi Shahadi regime, we had a lot of direct lobbying of governments by ICANN management and the board, and we wanted to shine a light on that, and that's made it into this recommendation. So I think at the very least we're going to want to support that. Now, Chris was a co-rapporteur, so I'm not going to ask Chris to lead the BC comment, but Chris, I'm pretty hopeful that you'll be a resource if the BC's comment is seeking, if the drafters are seeking.
Steve, you're cutting out. We can't hear you.
I'm not sure what I can do about that, but Barbara, thank you for filling me in. Chris, do you want to say anything about the draft report?
Sure. Thanks, Steve. This is Chris. Two things. First, Barbara actually was – not only did she sort of participate, she actually was a contributor to the draft itself. In fact, was responsible for drafting the whistleblower – improvements to the whistleblower policies and the recommendations. So thanks to Barbara for her work. And, of course, my co-rapporteur is Michael Karanopoulos, who did a great deal of the heavy lifting on the recommendations with regard to improving the DIDP this documentary information disclosure policy, as well as transparency of board deliberations. My major input, I guess, was regard to the BC's recommendation, as Steve noted, with regard to transparency of ICANN's interactions with governments, and happy to speak to that, obviously, in the rest of the document. But suffice to say, I think the goal was to provide the community a little more insight into ICANN interactions with governments outside of, and this is there's a, outside of the traditional ICANN government interactions regarding sort of ongoing policy work and administrative issues within ICANN. So we're not talking about you know, a conversation that occurs in the hallway of an ICANN meeting with a governmental representative and ICANN staff regarding a PDP working group, for example. I think the goal here is to provide some transparency into interactions outside of that world, and so hopefully that the recommendation captures that goal, and obviously welcome the BC's thoughts on that and the rest of the recommendations. I think it's a pretty thorough report. My co-rapporteur, Michael Karanakis, is an expert in this world, so I think we've benefited from his knowledge and expertise. But obviously, you know, we want the community's input and welcome further thoughts. So I do commend it to people's attention. You know, this is the first real substantive work product from the work out of the Workstream 2 subgroups, really. I know there's the jurisdiction's got a questionnaire. There's some other work that's been put out for public comment, but I think this is the first real sort of full report and recommendations that have been put out. So to some extent, it's important that the community, we get this right, because it's sort of the leading edge of the Workstream 2 work product, generally speaking. So I appreciate Steve putting it on the calendar and look forward to happy to answer any questions. And if I can't answer any questions, then I'm happy to put BC members in touch with Michael, my co-rapporteur, who can answer their questions too. But thanks.
Thank you, Chris. I hope you can hear me. I wanted to note that Workstream 2 recommendations, like the one we've just discussed, carry a lot of weight when it's approved by the community and sent to the ICANN board. The ICANN board would require a two-thirds vote to reject the recommendations, at which point there'd be a negotiation with the working group, and then another two-thirds vote if the board didn't then adopt the modified recommendations. This carries a higher bar than almost anything else that comes out of a community working group for board adoption when it comes to ICANN's transparency and accountability. So the work of these Workstream 2s are going to come at you for the next several months in a variety of ways. This is all summarized at the very end of the policy calendar. All right, thank you. I wanted to turn it over to Philip and Susan for GNSO Council recap. I've noted in here that the last meeting was February 16th. There's a transcript and agenda and a link to the motions that passed. Phil and Susan?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Phil here. And in regard to the topic, we just finished the comment on the transparency report. I have participated in that working group. I don't have the bandwidth to take the lead on drafting that, but I'd be happy to be a contributor to whoever develops an initial draft. So you can put me down as half volunteering for that one. And on the council, Susan and I were on that call for 2 hours last week in Reykjavik. That call started right after the end of all the CSG and BC stuff on Thursday morning. We did adopt one resolution, which was a resolution to confirm that the modification to the procedure that implements the WHOIS conflicts with privacy law policy recommendation is consistent with the intent of the policy recommendation. And the council discussion on that was very cooperative. There was broad consensus, and the it passed by unanimous vote. So that one was done rather readily. On other items, we confirmed the continuation of the GNSO chair's term as interim GNSO representative of the empowered community. We discussed a proposal to limit the scope of the upcoming third accountability and transparency review, and there was general agreement to have a more limited scope, which was consistent with the position that we took for the BC. We discussed charter for GNSO Standing Selection Committee for selection of GNSO representatives and nominees to future review teams and other ICANN structures. I don't remember anything significant coming out of that discussion. Do you, Susan, on that?
There's definitely pushback that it should be at the SG level and not the constituency level for people, members, councillors participating on the selection committee. So we're still pushing that one. In fact, I owe an email to the thread to push that agenda a little bit more.
Okay. Thanks for adding that. We discussed election of the GSNSO nominees for the second RDS review team. I'll let you speak to that one, Susan, because RDS is you have unchallenged expertise on that one.
I don't think there's much to say about that one right yet because they've extended the application period to March 7th. There's also a proposal to limit the review, though it's a broader proposal than the first proposal. That's being sent out to all of the current candidates and new candidates to make sure that they know what they're signing up for. And just in the review teams in general, yesterday on this call again, when we were on the call with the NTIA, there was concern by the government that any sort of proposal to limit reviews is negative in their opinion, that they would have a hard time defending the transition or something. They didn't say that exactly, but that was their point, that, you know, those review teams came out of the affirmation of commitments and felt like the spirit of those should be adhered to. So we're going to have some pushback from at least the U.S. GAC members if we agree to limiting the review teams. And they especially called out the ATRT 3 on that.
Yeah. Expand on the ATRT discussion in council. We wound up agreeing not to amend the policy, but simply as not being a good precedent, but simply suggesting that those on the review team kind of self-limit so that we weren't actually changing the policy statement. And that seems satisfactory for everyone. It's interesting that we're starting to run into so many headwinds with the NTIA on some of these issues, but then again, as Marilyn pointed out in the chat and as I responded, there's no head of NTIA right now, and we have no idea who the administration will nominate to be the new NTIA administrator or whether its position on there'll be any substantial alteration in regard to its position on ICANN and its the positions it takes within the GAC. So we're kind of in an interim period for the NTA at the moment. We had a discussion in council on the need to appoint a new GNSO co-chair for the CCWG on auction proceeds. Jonathan Robinson had been the GNSO co-chair. He voluntarily stepped down because a substantial portion of the monies that will enter that auction proceed fund will come from the resolution of the dispute over who will control .web, and Afilias is one of the three parties involved in that dispute, along with Donuts and VeriSign. So he thought it was appropriate that he step down from that position, and we discussed, I think we're going to issue a call for volunteers for that to replace Jonathan on that group, which is going to be making recommendations for the disbursement of a great deal of money, well over 100 and possibly over $200 million in funds. And then we spent a bunch of time just reviewing the schedule for Copenhagen and looking at what our workload was going to be there. And then there was a discussion. We had gotten a letter from the ThicWhois implementation team describing a number of privacy law developments and how the IRT has considered them, and that they informed us they don't expect the developments to affect the timeline for the transition to ThicWhois, And we had already discussed that letter at our last meeting, and Erica Mann had circulated a draft counsel request for an update on the legal review that had previously been done on this question. And I think my recollection is counsel agreed that updating that legal review would be useful as we go forward on this. Is that your recollection, Susan?
Yes.
Okay. And that was it for last week, and the next council meeting will be in Copenhagen, and the working session, and of course, I think the regular kind of open review of issues, which has been held over the first day and a half traditionally before the formal opening of the meeting, but I believe at this meeting we're compressing it down to one full day on Sunday for kind of that open discussion and update on various issues and meetings with various other parts of ICANN. I believe it's all going to be on Sunday in Copenhagen rather than on Saturday. On Saturday there's a number of PDP working groups having long open working meetings. So that's it for council. Any questions on that?
Yes, Phil. Myself, yes. And Marilyn Cade are in the queue.
Okay.
If you'll just hit mute.
Thanks, Steve. Go ahead.
Somebody's getting a lot. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. With respect to the limited scope for the ATRT3, I also ran into headwinds from NTIA a year ago when we revealed the community did not want to do in parallel a full-blown ATRT3 at the same time that six of the Workstream 2 projects were directly on accountability. ATRT3 could not be a full-scope review. We don't even have the volunteers to do both. And the worst case would be conflicting recommendations that come out of it. So the community itself is solidly behind the idea of limiting the scope of just this review, and we haven't changed the bylaws where the scope of ATRTs are now defined. They're no longer in the affirmation of commitments. They're now part of the bylaws. So I think we just push back on NTIA that they seem to be stuck on a principle of this notion that a limited scope review can't be explained, but it can be explained. We are doing more for accountability than we've ever done before. They just need to learn to tell the story better. So let's push back hard on that. And then, Susan, with respect to a limited scope on the WHOIS, it's because of the parallel work on RDS. So that's a story we have to tell. It's a bottom-up, community-based decision that we don't want to tax our volunteers more than is reasonable, and we don't want to have overlapping and conflicting initiatives at the same time. So let's push back on that and not really worry too much about what NTIA is saying. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. And maybe once there is a new NTIA administrator, it'd be a good idea for BC leaders to seek a meeting and have an exchange of views with whoever that new person is. Marilyn, you have your hand up.
Thanks. I see that Chris preferred I speak under AOB, but I need to speak now, I think, and then I'll be dropping off. There's a fireside chat to recognize Glenn de Saint-Jurie, who this is all about, to me, the GNS Council and the great work she's done. I just wanted to be sure, Phil, you and Susan had an opportunity to mention that event on Saturday. Others who've been involved with Glenn for many, many years will be speaking, but I think the big issue to me is making sure that the Council and the BC know about it. So I'll just turn that back to you, and then I'm going to have to drop up.
Okay. Thanks, Marilyn. And I think we all have the as much esteem as anyone can have for anyone as in regard to Glenn. And if my schedule permits, I'll certainly be at that event. I've got a pretty jammed schedule that day, but I'll try to come by. Denise?
Thanks, Phil. I want to agree with Steve's comments regarding the ATRT3 review. I agree substantively with it, but I think it's an important distinction here is that the community, either through the BC CSG, GNSO Council, should provide guidance, and their recommendations for the focus or scope of ATRT3, but it would, in my view, be inappropriate for any chairs or other elements of the community to try and dictate what the community review group focus on. Their responsibility, in my view, is to follow the bylaws, but the bylaws don't empower the GNSO Council or the Workstream 2 chairs or anyone else to unilaterally limit this ATRT3 group. This also extends to other of the former AOC reviews. In my view, it also would be inappropriate to preemptively limit the WHOIS review or the SSR review or the others before the community group gathers together, considers what their responsibility is under the bylaws, and then proposes what their work plan is. I think it's I don't think these are mutually exclusive. I think the review groups can easily avoid duplication and follow the mandate contained in the bylaws, and I would support the BC drafting or joining guidance that that essentially spells that out. Thanks.
Okay, and thanks for that, Denise. I note that Steve has put some responsive remarks to you in the chat room. So I'm sure you can, you and he can, and other BC members can continue this discussion. Seeing no further hands, I'm going to, I guess, Susan and I will step back, and then we can get on to the next item, which is the CSG stuff on the agenda.
That's you, Barbara.
Okay, I'll go quickly since time is running out. Everyone, I provided an in-depth report for you, so, and I'm not going to repeat it line by line. I welcome your perusal of it, and I'm happy to answer any follow-up questions that you may have. I'll just say generally, I think that we would all agree that the intersessional went fairly well. There was no sugarcoating of the divergencies within the House that occasionally pose problems and challenges to consensus building and unanimity on issues. But I would suggest that to you and my impression was that at the bottom line, there was support for continuing the intersessional process as a means of nurturing the non-contracted party house in areas where we do agree, in particular concerning the need for transparency with respect to ICANN governance and compliance actions. On that point, there was broad agreement among all the participants in the room. There was also questions about the timing. You know, is it necessary to have an intersessional every year, or perhaps we could do it every other year? But I think also there was a concern about the location of these intersessionals and choosing a location that would enable greater face-to-face contact with key ICANN staff, including the CEO and the new Director for Compliance and so forth. We met with Joran Marby virtually. I'm just going to give my own view that I felt that that meeting was not really great for technical reasons. There were problems hearing him. Some of us were getting kicked off the Internet and so forth and so on. So I think that is one of the reasons why there was support for choosing a location for these meetings to go forward that would better enable direct contact with him going forward. But having said that, the CSG was able to make the points with him that were important to us. Chris's point concerning the need for prior consultation with the community on pending negotiations of contracts rather than sort of soliciting comments post facto, which for all intents and purposes could not alter the agreement. He also heard and understood the importance of our point about giving the community space to resolve disagreements on proposed changes to the new GTLD Registry's base agreement rather than driving the process from the staff level. So we made those points clearly with him. Also, Rinalia was in the room and I think heard and understood what we were driving at. But as I said, in my view, it was a bit of a frustrating opportunity for engagement with him. I would say the big takeaways, Steve summarized very succinctly in the document that you got last night. where there was considerable discussion about what we will do to fill so-called board seat number 14, which is the GNSO non-contracted party house representative to the board of directors. Currently, that is Marcus Coomer. He has indicated that he would like to run for a second term, so he would run as the incumbent. And Matthew Shears of the Center for Democracy and Technology was also put forward as a candidate. Just going on recent email traffic within the CSG XCOM, we are actively soliciting recommendations of other people who would also want to throw their hat into the ring. We are having to compress what ordinarily would take 21 weeks into 10 and a half weeks to get this done by May 3rd. So perhaps there will be further discussion within the BC how we want to approach that and who we want to put forward as our consensus recommendation for further discussion within the non-contracted party house. The second big takeaway, and I'll also defer to Jimson on this, but a lot of interest in forming a working group or a drafting team or whatever you want to call it to look at budget issues, and one of the reasons being that if any sort of budget issue, if the empowered community wants to challenge a particular budget decision by the board, that we would have sort of a drafting team in place that could quickly tee up that action and draft relevant text to do so. And then there was another expression of keen interest in forming a working group to shape the terms of reference. Steve referred to this earlier for the 2019 GNSO review. Interestingly, there was cross-house consensus on the importance of engaging the contracted party house in this review of terms of reference also. So that it would be, we would have a consensus of both non-contracted and contracted party houses concerning the terms of reference for this third-party GNSO review. So that is it for the moment for the intersessional meeting. Secondly, I just wanted to point out that we were able to move forward. This was an initiative that Denise actually advocated and we followed through on. We realized CSG consensus on a letter to the board concerning the process that goes into planning high-interest topic sessions at ICANN meetings. And as it turns out, our submission of this to the board was timely because we're already encountering difficulties concerning a hit being planned on data protection for ICANN 58, which is not being approached in a multi-stakeholder manner. So Greg Shatton is currently in intense consultations with the organizers of that session. But the fact that we have this into the board, I think, puts us in on record as underscoring the importance of this being driven through the multi-stakeholder process, not by one interested party. And then finally, concerning the ICANN 58 schedule, I sent that out to you all last night. I would say the important thing for that is we need by the 7th of March your ideas of topics that you want the CSG to explore in our meeting with the board, as well as in our meetings with the registries and registrars. But most important, we need your suggestions for topics for that board meeting by the 7th of March. So I'll just hold it there and invite any questions from people. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara. This is Chris. Not seeing any questions. I just want to thank you for your report that you sent out to everybody. I hope everyone has a chance to take a look at that. It's very thorough and provides some, I think, good insight into what was discussed. One other quick thing I'd add, I guess, I think Denise maybe suggested asking Marby about the status of the CSG letter on data metrics and getting better insight into the transparency and metrics. I raised that issue with him on our interaction, and he first explained that he was hoping to improve the time between receiving a letter to the board and himself and responding to that. And secondly, he said that a response was imminent. So hopefully we'll see that in the next next few days or so, and we'll get a response from the board with regard to that, that CSG letter. So I wanted to flag that for folks. Susan, I see your hand raised.
Yes, thank you, Barbara. Your comprehensive report was great, and just so everyone knows, I sat next to Barbara during a lot of the sessions, and she was typing like crazy. She was on top of it, so, and I really appreciate the report. It's very thorough. One of the sort of feelings I came out of this intersessional was that we shouldn't let the NCUC or SG and sort of dictate as much on the planning of these intersessionals. My understanding is that originally the intersessional came out of a desire to have direct contact with ICANN executives, and that was sorely lacking in this meeting. I think it's always good to try to get along with the other side, but we could do that in different avenues. And I don't think getting along with, you know, meeting with the NCSG is as critical as working, getting, having transparency with the executive staff at ICANN. And so I'm just, you know, when we when there is a decision to have another intersessional, I think we either insist that they provide a certain number of execs at the meeting, or we all go to LA so they we cannot be avoided, because the primary focus of this should have been interaction with the executive team, and that was not, that was extremely lacking in my opinion.
This is Chris. Thanks, Susan, for that, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I was attempting to try to make that, make those points during the planning phase. And just didn't seem to resonate with enough people. But I think based on what transpired in Reykjavik and how sort of we had sort of limited engagement, hopefully people will see the light and will recognize the importance of focusing on that. Because I think that we get most bang for the buck when we have that those healthy interactions with staff and management. Susan, is that an old hand or a new hand?
New hand, just one more comment. And so we may need to play, you know, pull a play card from the NCSG and just say, no, we're not going to participate in that. But the CSG will all show up in LA for a 2-day meeting. And that's the way it is. I mean, just play a little hardball with ICANN staff and just say, absolutely not. It has to be more inclusive of the executive team. And because that's, you know, it just seems like, oh, we're going to try to get along. And, you know, well, we'll probably never get along, but we'll always work together, you know, or maybe we do get along, but that, you know, we just need to come in much harder. And that's not a criticism on your working on planning this, Chris. It's just, I think we need to be more assertive.
Yep, agree. Thank you. Thanks, Susan. Any other questions for Barbara about anything she's reported on? Seeing none, maybe Jimson, I'll quickly turn to you, and then I can wrap up. So, Jimson? Jimson, are you connected? We can't hear you if you're speaking. Chantel, is he still on the phone? Wait for just give Gibson a second.
Hi, Chris. It's Chantel. One more moment, please. Chris, it appears Jimson was disconnected, and it looks like the operator is dialing him back. Jimson, are you back on?
Yes, I'm back on.
Great. Jimson, why don't we turn to you?
Okay, this is Jimson speaking. I always get cut off once I'm online for 1 hour. So maybe we'll do something about that. Well, I would like to thank Barbara for her report, very comprehensive. And also to note the issue of compliance and abuse was very key, as we discussed with Jimmy. And it was some of the thought of some of us that there should be a form of liaison that will be able to follow up, because it's one of our key points to the intersection. So I think we need to raise this up and CSG going forward. And Barbara, yes, you did talk about the budget small working group or so, or small drafting team. As you said, yes, this with respect to the entire community and the need for us to exercise our rights and power. So I chaired that meeting with Ed Morris. I shared the session with Ed Morris, and it turned out that it happens to be only BC that has a standing budget committee or finance committee, which is something good for us. It's a good structure we have in BC. So going forward, is there anyone that is interested in the budget issues or finance issues, they can still join in the group. So, but just to say that we have a good structure in place, which others want to emulate. So, secondly, on the member cliques, this year we plan to use the member cliques for the invoicing and working behind the scene to perfect the process. So, just for us to know that. With regard to the invoicing process, it's going to be member clicks, but so far, so good with member clicks. Thank you very much, Steve. Back to you.
Thank you, Jimson. Thank you very much. Any questions for Jimson? I don't see any. So, just real quick, wrapping up in the last minute here. We'll do our next meeting. Actually, technically, on March 13th, we're going to wait till we get to. Get to Copenhagen. We'll have our private meeting on March 13th at 12:15. It'll be a lunch meeting, and then our public meeting will be on March 14th. Later that afternoon on the 14th. I think Barbara sent around to everyone that list of meetings. So please look again in your email from yesterday, and you'll see the BC meetings. But we'll have we won't do a call 2 weeks from now. We'll just wait until we get to Copenhagen and have our meetings then. So that's it for me as far as any other business. Is there anything else from folks they want to raise? Okay, not seeing anything. Then I look forward to seeing hopefully many, if not all of you, in Copenhagen in a few weeks. And safe travels to those that are going, and look forward to talking to you there, if not via email. So thanks all very much.
Thanks, Chris. Operator, you may now stop the recording. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.